Blog Talk Hi. Radio.
Lisa.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Lisa's Walk the Talk Show, where you'll get a sneak peek into stories and lives behind the authors, entertainers, and celebrities that you love to read about. Sit back, relax, and let Lisa and her guests entertain you. Now, here's your host, Lisa.
Hi, this is Lisa, and I'm talking with, how do you say your name? Is it Izumi?
It's Izumi.
Izumi. I have us on our show right now. Is that okay to record this right now, or I can turn it private? Would you rather be private or on the show?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever you see fit.
Oh, do you know why I want to? I know we're going to do our Zoom meeting following this, but you know, the first time you get to talk with somebody, it's just so, there's so much magic in that, and I didn't want to lose that. And we have such a cool connection. Do you feel that? Okay. So tell us a little bit about who you are, and let's start with going back to your beautiful bird, your little starling, how you found this bird.
Yes, well, it goes back many years ago. I was actually in grade 6, and I grew up in Toronto, Canada, and in our playground, our school playground, above the bell, there was a little nest and very loud chirping that we could hear. I could hear from the ground. And one day when I walked into the playground, I saw this little bird that fell from the nest and helpless and just a tiny little fledgling. And a boy actually had it in his hand, and he was teasing the bird. And so right away, you know, I was 12 years old. I said, you know, you can't tease this bird. You need to be nice to it. So I basically asked him to give me the bird so that I can take it home and care for it. And luckily I'd found a styrofoam cup that was in the playground, and I put, you know, this little starling, which we would call Kudo eventually, which means black in Japanese, in the styrofoam cup. And I basically ran home with this little chirping starling, which I didn't know was a starling at that time, in the styrofoam cup, and the rest is history. The bird never left our family after that day.
And it was quite a history as well. Did you? How long did Kudo live?
Kudo is actually a Guinness World Record holder as the oldest domesticated starling, and we know this because in one of the first veterinary visits we had with the bird, it was recorded. So luckily we went back to the vet and got the bill, the invoice that we had been charged back many, many years ago. And so we've had Kudo almost 20 years, and Kudo saw me as a 12-year-old child all the way, even surpassed, you know, my wedding day. I have pictures with Kudo on my wedding day, and unfortunately Kudo died a few years after that, but a beautiful bird and a beautiful part of our family for two decades.
That when I saw your story, I couldn't believe it, and you're not going to believe this, but there's other people that have had these domesticated starlings and have also written books. So I think I'm going to try to do an interview with each of them if they are still with us and want to share their stories. I never knew a starling could change a person's life as much as one does. I'll give a synopsis of my starling. I could not get out of work at all this Friday evening. And so it just kept getting delayed. And when I walked out our mall doors, there was a robin sitting in the fountain. And it just had this weird look on his face. And I'm like, why do I feel something weird is about to happen? Mm-hmm. And I walked out down the alley to my car, and there was this little bird running right out into one of the busiest streets we have in downtown Rochester. And so I told my husband, stop, and I ran out and grabbed it so it didn't get hit and brought it back in the alley, kept trying to find where it may have come from. We had an event the day before which brought in thousands and thousands of people downtown, and I wonder still if it got separated from its mom, but it definitely was not ready to fly. It didn't have all of its flight feathers, and it was just struggling to find anything, shelter, anything. So I, I put it by a door anyway, and it flew up, and it couldn't even fly halfway up the door. So I said, I have no choice. I've got to take this bird home, release it. I'll feed it, take care of it, release it. We've got some woods that I, you know, have a sanctuary that I can put the animals in that are free roam and live their lives out. Well, this bird will not leave our lives. I mean, he or she, I think it's a she, because they say that if they have a little pink band under their around their beak when they're young, that's a female, and then there's something with the eyes. She's, you know, we call her a she most of the time. But she literally knows every member in our family, our cats. Yeah. She stands up to everyone. She's got her favorite bath spots. All of, you know, like if I'm doing dishes, she flies in and wants to bathe in the nice warm water, or she'll push the cat away so she can use the water bowl. It's quite fascinating, and she's just starting to sing, and she's just starting to, you know, become like a literal family member of our family. Free roam, goes to bed when she knows bedtime. And so this morning she kind of inspired a lullaby. So I'm working on that in the background, a little song that someday I'll produce for private reasons only, because I'm not a very good singer. But I wanted to talk with you and your bird, and then we'll go into our other meeting on the other. But how has your bird changed? What are you doing now from that inspiration that you had as a child?
Well, Kudo will never leave our hearts and our minds. You know, little moments, even though it was many years ago when we lost Kudo, things will trigger memories of this bird, which you can't help but to have deeply connect the deep connections and the incredible ability, like you had mentioned, for the creature to understand and relate to different humans based on their personalities, and you know, you can't even actually believe that's possible coming from a wild starling unless you actually own one. And so I guess, you know, I look out to the starlings in the wild, and one thing that I realize is, you know, when you look at birds, and starlings are considered pests in North America in some areas because they are plenty in Toronto anyways, but what people don't realize is that each and every one of those starlings that you see in the wild actually have their own given personality and this incredible intelligence and social commitment to their, you know, to who they fly with, who they flock with. And in this case, it's you. In Kudo's case, it was our family. And I guess the bird just inspires me to have a broader mind and open mind in terms of understanding that animals, even though what we think they are capable of doing is beyond that and can be beyond that. So to have an open mind to understand how complicated it is in terms of creatures and their abilities to connect to humans and their abilities to have personalities and their abilities to mimic. Starlings don't have their own song, so they mimic. And you'll soon find that your bird, Allie, will be mimicking what you say and the sounds that aren't even something that you think they're picking up, but they do. So Kudo, for example, would mimic my watch, because every hour my watch used to go teet teet, and before you knew it, the bird had picked up teet teet, and I always thought it was the top of the hour, like every 10 minutes, like, what's going on? But it was Kudo who had mastered how to, you know, imitate this watch that was attached to me, and maybe, you know, in Kudo's mind, oh, this belongs to Izumi, and so, you know, I want to mimic something that is with her and goes off every hour. I'm not sure. And currently as well, I love doing art. And one of the things that I've done with Kudo is paint some paintings of my bird. And as well, I'm currently creating and designing a Rumi jewelry, which is meaningful jewelry. So jewelry that has meaning either symbolically or has meaning to me, myself. And Kudo was definitely a very important part of my life. And so I've designed earrings, you know, and inspired by Kudo, for example. So, you know, they live on, even though they've passed on, animals, in thought, in inspiration, and in memory.
That is so beautifully said. And I have to say, I looked up your starling earrings and your other jewelry on your Etsy page, And I was just amazed at the detail. And I'm like, I have to buy a pair of these just for me. I might even buy a pair just for Allie, just so she has, I mean, that, maybe that's disrespectful. I don't mean that in any way, but she likes to play with everything.
Oh.
Truth be told, we bought this Bob Ross puppet. That is her favorite toy. Like, she takes Bob everywhere. If she's eating, she goes to Bob and tries to see him. She, like, I don't know about your bird, but, like, when she loses a feather, she will immediately go down and get it. And then she, like last night, she, I said, oh, look, she's tickling Bob. She's taking the feather and rubbing it all over his face and pulls his hair. But if she has an unknown food, because we're still trying all foods, anything that she'll eat that's healthy, we have given her. Well, she's sneaked a few other things as well. But, you know, we're real watchful over what she gets into, because we have other pets and I don't want her eating their foods, because some might have more salt and some might be just not the right thing. And I think it was it you, do you used to feed, or did I read somewhere that you used to feed your bird shrimp and tofu?
Yes. My mother was a homemaker. So luckily for us, we could, you know, Kudo had 24-hour care. If it wasn't one of us four girls in the house, it was my mother. My mother was a very amazing traditional Japanese home cook, home chef, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knows the value of Japanese cooking in terms of health for humans. So she just transferred that into little meal sets, quite honestly, for Kudo. So Kudo probably was the best fed bird with high-end Japanese-style cuisine for most of her life. And so, you know, my mother would stick to things, you know, your basics, proteins, such as tofu, such as dried shrimp. And ironically, Kudo's favorite meat was chicken. So
that's Valley's too. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, we went to Taco Bell one night after work. I'll give them a free plug here. But we went just because it was easy. It was late at night. We just didn't have time to cook. We just grabbed their food to go home and eat. Allie fell in love with the lettuce. She sees the Taco Bell box come, and she literally is on it, ripping. She can get inside the box, into the wrapper, and grab the lettuce before I can even put my hand down on the box. That's how, in one setting, she learned that. So these birds are so highly intelligent. I swear they'd make a better watch bird than a dog sometimes. Because they know all your family members, really, don't they? Like,
they
did you notice, like, with,
do.
How they stand up straight like a little doorman, and when somebody comes in the room? I wanted to share that. You know, your story inspired me knowing that another bird could live so long, because I think Mozart's bird that he bought, I don't remember the name now. Do you remember the Mozart's bird's name? I can't remember. But it was only lived with him for like 3 or 4 years. And I said, well, maybe it was the housekeeper that got tired of the cleaning and fed him a bad egg or something. I don't know. But the truth is, these birds are enormously curious. They never stop. On, you know, Sundays is Allie's favorite day because we are with her 24/7 and she does not sleep much. Oddly, she's allowing me to cuddle her now, which she has never done up until this last week, and she's become very cuddly. And I'm very so appreciative of her and you, because you were the forerunner of all of these people with these birds. And that's why I want to make sure people know about you and your bird and this incredible story that may or may not ever get, you know, reprinted someday. I hope so, because that book that you wrote that I haven't seen, that I'm ordering one of your last copies of, I really do hope that another publisher hears this and picks that up for you. I would publish it if you didn't have anybody to publish it. But I love, love, love this story. And I want the world to know that all starlings aren't bad. And from the few people that I've read that have had them, every one of those starlings came into their life and inspired some other art or some other gift for the world for people to enjoy. And you with your jewelry, it's beautiful. Go check her out. What is your Etsy page? Is it an easy name for people to remember?
Well, it's called Arumi Creations, and it's the Japanese word. It started out, actually, funny enough, I started designing jewelry in the midst of COVID. I went to Home Depot, quite honestly, and in aisle 17, there were these beautiful fasteners that are used for boating materials. They're used for boating because They don't rust, they don't corrode, and they were shiny, beautiful components. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's this? Jewelry at Home Depot? No. Basically, I, by chance, made a necklace that night. And then from there, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm onto something. And I'm going to call my jewelry line Arumi. And Arumi in Japanese means aluminum, because it was, they were aluminum fasteners that I bought my, and made my first necklace with. But Arumi also means love, stay, beauty. So my wish and hope is that anyone that has my Arumi jewelry will love it, because it will have a lasting and long durability, and that they will be enjoyed forever. So I kind of, there's twofold, the underlying meaning of aluminum, but also love, stay, beauty, which I thought was a perfect match. And finally, my mother's maiden name was Miura. It's a Japanese name, and the same letters have the same, the spelling of her last name, M-I-U-R-A, is also in the word Arumi, A-R-U-M-I. And she passed away during COVID, and so she is a huge inspiration as well when it comes to designing. And all the Japanese culture and the values she taught us four girls lives on as well through my jewelry. So there's a lot of thought, and it's basically meaningful jewelry that's made from simple industrial materials of aluminum, sterling silver, and stainless steel.
I have never, I've never seen jewelry like yours. Okay, I'm not a huge jewelry person. Like, I don't, I do have jewelry in my store, believe it or not, because I sell little pieces as thank you gifts. I'm right across from, I guess I give a plug there, across from a world famous hospital, Mayo Clinic, and so I sell a lot of little tiny gift item things, one offs, or just something that somebody's selling out. But the jewelry has always, okay. So I'll give you an example. Yesterday I had a lady come in with her sister. She had throat cancer. They were able to do the surgery the same day they discovered it. And so, because they had a cancellation, oddly. So she comes in and she's digging through my jewelry. And I had just bought all this jewelry from a store over in Wisconsin. And she finds this ring. It says Jesus on it. And it has a little tag that the person I bought it from wrote flawed, because there was a, like a scratching on the J or some, one of the letters. And so she starts crying. She can't talk. She's using a little board to write on. And she is, her sister is telling me that she had lost the same ring on Monday right before her surgery. And they looked everywhere, could not find this ring. And she was just crushed. And she put out notice everywhere, if you find this ring, let me know how important this ring was to her. And she comes into my store, not even expecting to find a bookstore. They just happened down the hallway and saw it and came in. And there is a Jesus ring, just like the one she lost. But I said, but that one's flawed. I said, I'm the only one that has the other flawed one, because I said, Jesus can't be flawed. And so I proudly wear that. And she wanted the flawed ring. So, of course, I gave it to her. But honestly, I see miracles like that every single day in here. And if that jewelry can inspire someone, which I know yours will, I've never seen jewelry like yours. It's beautiful. Oh. It's different. I love it. I can't wait to put it in here. And I can't wait for our Zoom meeting, which will be shortly here. I'll get off the phone here.
Well, one.
Go ahead.
Yes, one actual inspiration. I'll just quickly mention one of the lines that I started. It leverages the concept of Morse code and leverages the concept of shoji, which in Japanese is an architectural screen that is used to reveal a beautiful garden or conceal. So it slides to conceal and reveal. So leveraging that idea and teamed with an inspiration, which, you know, I'm going to kind of brag, but my son, he could decode things in his head. He was at age 13 a world record holder in one of the cubing series. He used to be a Rubik's Cube kind of fanatic. Age 13, he broke a world record on a puzzle called the Pyramix. He still holds the Canadian record. But you could see that this child could look at something and decode it and make sense and create, you know, the final solve. And so looking at him, too, he inspired me. I thought, well, he can do it. Mom can also decode things. But, you know, maybe not through a Rubik's Cube, but maybe through language like Morse code. It is a type of language. I love languages. And so then I came up with the concept of designing jewelry where concealed is that the actual pattern in the design of the piece is dictated by Morse code patterns, which you cannot change. They're dictated by the given pattern of that language. But revealed is that when you decode all the Morse code codes, it spells a meaningful word or name. So I've made necklaces. You talk about, you know, cancer and sickness. So one of my childhood friends had breast cancer. So I made her a necklace that in Morse code spelled strength. And when she decoded my necklace, she just fell to her knees and said, "Izumi, you have no idea how much that meant to me." So when I can touch people and when I can use jewelry or form to actually connect and have a meaning or express something meaningful to that recipient, to me, that makes me extremely happy. So even when I showed you the Kudo earrings and you could relate to it, that type of joy is part of what makes and inspires me as a designer, new, self-taught, in this whole world of jewelry, which I've again been inspired from my mother and just since COVID. So thank you very much for your nice feedback, because I'm really passionate about it. I work at my work every day, even though I work full-time in IT. This is my passion, which I do once I log off of work and every weekend since COVID started. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, you are very welcome. And I had seen some of that Morse code jewelry that you had on your site, and I was like, no way. This is like the coolest concept, and I do want to buy some of it, by the way. But, I mean, you are so right. Like, the people that come into my store, now I've just moved into this new location, but I had been directly across from the Mayo for about 4.5 years. So now my customers are all finding me over here. But they are looking for hope. I mean, if I can say, what are they looking for? It's not a used book. It's not a new book. It's not the art, my art, even my art. It's or the jewelry, anything in particular. When they come in here, they're looking at the lights. They're looking at ambience, and they are looking for hope. And the rest of the things that they can buy and look and feel, like the Jesus ring yesterday, your jewelry will do that same thing, and especially when there's a hidden message in it. How absolutely cool is that? I mean, I wish I could say you'll be a billionaire, but you might serve a billionaire, because they do occasionally drop through here. I get a lot of celebrities that come through here, people that you would never imagine come into my store. The greatest people in the world come into this store, and I and people like you, everybody feeds each other something. And if people can even just come in, maybe they can't buy your piece that day, but if they can come in and just look at it and feel that hope, it'll shine through already. I know it will, because I see it with everything else. And some people are they have just found out they have cancer, or they have just found out their cancer returned. They have just found out their terminal. They've just found out their mom or their partner is going to die, their terminal. And I, having been through a lot of things myself, my own husband having cancer, me going through some major health things, I know where they're at, sort of. I can't be in them and know exactly. But I know that depth of that pain and that rawness, as you do, losing your mom, and I'm blessing you for having those years with your mom. I'm sure she is shining down through your work now. I'm sure of that, absolutely sure of it. But I just know that if we all kind of help each other a little bit and just art touches people, our voices touch people, and as we've learned, both starlings touch people. So don't shoo that starling away. If it comes to your door, feed it, is what I would say. Would you agree with that? Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go here, and I will call you back on that Zoom meeting. I just wanted to say hello in person before we went into that, because your story is so powerful, and I just wanted to share that with the world before we get into the business things of getting some cool jewelry for the store. And I'll talk to you in a few minutes, but if there's anything you'd like to add or say, please take a second here and say that to the people listening.
Yeah, I would say serendipity, or there's magic to things that happen just random, and there's a connection to a connection to a connection. And I think this is an example that Lisa touched on, that Kudo and Ali, two starlings that are wild birds, they have no idea how they've impacted the world, in essence, how they've impacted my family, how they've impacted Ali's family. And now through them, technically, Ali and I are connecting. That it really is fascinating how something like two wild starlings can lead to a connection of two human beings in two different cities, but yet we are connected with similar experiences, and we could share these stories and relate to them at a different level than just writing in a book, because the reader might enjoy the stories, but really it's hard to even share our experience, the experience we had with Kuro, unless you have actually had a startling impact and touch your life. And someone like you, Lisa, you can completely relate to everything and anything I'll share with you about Kuro. And it's also magical when you can share that with someone else and they really actually get it.
Amen to that. My show's ending. We will talk in a few minutes, and very well said, and there'll be another interview.
Thank you very much, Lisa, for the opportunity. Thank you, everyone.
I thank you so much.